So if the GDX were to be sideways to down for another week or so, ideally reaching the levels I'm showing here, it doesn't have to reach exactly that. But what we want to be aware of is this decline is probably a correction. So there might be a pretty good setup here in the next week or two or so.
Got it. Yeah, that looks beautiful, actually.
It does. It's almost textbook. It's almost too good.
Bob Miner, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing really well. I want to thank you so much for joining me. And also, I got this in the mail. This was awesome. Thank you so much, Brad. Thank you for autographing it with me. It is available on Amazon.
Good. Soon to be a bestseller.
Talk about that because we are in election year here, and it's something, it's a trend or a cycle or whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to defer to you. I believe that strongly just because I've experienced it, but I've never had any really hard data, if you would, to back it up. So you come at a great time.
Well, good. Yeah, the name of the book is The Definitive Guide to the U.S. Election Cycle and Stock Market Trends. So over the years, many people have written articles about how the stock market relates to the various years within the election cycle and political parties and all that. No one's ever done a book that was just centered on this information with a real breakdown of the data. So that's what the book is. So we can talk a little bit about it now. And what's really good is we're right in a really strong bias period for an election year. Of course, we're in an election year. So we'll just take a look at a couple of charts and things for the listeners to be aware of right around now and in the weeks ahead. So let's take a look at number one here. First of all, the first quarter in an election year has no bias. It's not positive, not negatively biased. So there's no information that's going to help you, give you an edge on trade. However, we're past the first quarter now. And so we know that the first quarter of this year was a very strongly positive bias. We had a great first quarter this year. So that kind of sets it apart, and that means we can take a look at election years that just had a first quarter bias and kind of ratchet down into what is a likely outcome for the rest of the year. So number one, this chart that we're showing now is all of the election years that have a first quarter bias since 1952. And this blue line is just the average trend of all of those years. So what I want to focus on is between around April, May into the end of September. And that's a very positive trend. So what's important about this, averages, we always want to be aware of averages, because unless we know how that data is broken down that made the average up, it's kind of meaningless. Because we don't know how many were actually positive, negative, or whether we had some extremes or not. But in election years that have a first quarter, had a first positive first quarter, there's a really strong positive bias between around May into the end of September. So that's right pretty much where we are right now.
Right.
Now, it can be all over the place between May and September, but in a minute I'll show you some other data that's going to be helpful. In that almost all of the years are strongly positive for that period. So that's a piece of information we can use. I'll show you how to use it in a minute.
Yes.
So the little text I have on the right here, it doesn't mean that there's not a lot of volatility during that period or that the May low is not exceeded. But here's a piece of information. If a May low is exceeded, don't know if that's going to happen, but if it is, S&P usually recovers to above the May high by the end of September. So I don't know what's going to happen in the next few weeks or the next few months, but if by chance we have a decline, which would be, and it takes out the May low, which isn't too far below the market, we want to be aware that that positive bias going into September, since 1952, 8 of the 11 years that had a first quarter positive bias exceeded the May high. That would be a pretty strong bounce back if we had that correction. And 100% of the years since 1952 during an election year that had a first quarter positive, it was positive first quarter, exceeded the May low by September 20th, September 20th being the official end of summer. So I don't know what's going to happen, but here's what I know a lot of people, we'll look at a chart in a minute of the S&P. I think we're at a high that's going to last a few weeks, more than likely anyway. That if the S&P should have a corrective decline, even if it lasted a few weeks, even if it took out the May low, that based on the election cycle since 1952 of the election year, we would more likely see a bounce back at least into that range that traded in May and more than likely above the May high. So let's take a look at a chart.
Yeah, I have several questions too, but go ahead. I'll hold those until you're done.
If you want to do it, do the question. You can do it now.
Okay, so my first question is, you have this cliche or old adage with traders, is sell in May and go away. Mm-hmm. That does not work in an election year, correct?
Well, I don't want to say it doesn't work, because it's not a matter of working or not. Even if it was 8 out of 10 years, sell in May and go away, the market goes down, that doesn't mean the next year it's not going to go up. So I'm really, you know, I don't have the data for that on all years. I have all of the data, certainly for all election years, and this is what I know. So I'm going to make a decision on information that I know, also knowing that I never know what the next data point is. But if something's been happening 80 to 90% of the time in the past, we got a pretty good odds if we're set up, it's going to happen again.
Got it. So next question is, and it's been somewhat confusing to me, and I'm so glad you're presenting data, because I interview so many people, and it's almost extreme where everybody says, hey, we're at a top, we're close to a top. But I've always somewhat questioned that, and I agree with them for all the fundamental reasons and all that. So no negative on them. But one of the things that's given me a lot of pause is that this is an election year. And the data you're showing, the data that you're showing, is that this should actually be very, very positive. Correct?
Relatively, yeah, relatively. Positive bias, definitely, between the spring and election year and the late summer of an election year. Yep.
Interesting. Okay. Last question is, and maybe you don't have the data for this, or you can even give, I don't know, what you think. Why?
And well, I think the answer. I don't have the data for that because that's making a judgment call.
Okay.
But here's the obvious reason is, during election year, the incumbent administration does everything they can to boost the economy.
Yeah.
So that's why of the 4 years within the election cycle, the election years are some that usually tend to be the strongest. So they want to get reelected. So what can we do to get reelected?
So if I go back 30 years to my college economics professor, Econ 101, we actually talked about that. We went over data going back to the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You brought all of this up. Anyways, yep. Go ahead. Carry on. What else do you got?
Okay, super. Let's go to this next chart. We'll go forward. And again, because you were emphasizing gold, silver, and those markets, that's where I got a lot of chart for you. But
we'll see those.
I'm here plugging my book all day long. Don't miss it.
Okay.
So this is the S&P. It's the daily closes, and it's up through last Friday. So we're only a couple days behind on this.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't go through the details, but because that'd take a few other charts, but number one is I don't forecast the future. I'm not a forecaster. I'm not an economist. I'm a trader, and we can even see some of my trading results if you want. But every piece of information I look at is there a bias? Can I use to make a specific trading decision? And a trading decision means Do you buy or do you not buy? Do you sell? Where do you put your stop? Where do you enter the market? That sort of thing. So there are no consistently successful forecasters. This has been studied to death. Whole books have been written on it. So people that forecast and believe that they know the future of the market, and I know that's what people want, but, you know, it's just, that's not what traders do. Traders identify a condition with a high probability outcome and acceptable capital exposure. So again, this is the S&P. I don't have all the technicals in here, but let's just say the S&P were to make a top around this week. You can quote me on that's a good probability. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know a trade strategy to use for it. And it happens to be coinciding right with the Fed meeting and the CPI report this Wednesday. For those of you who might be listening that are Elliott Wave oriented, coming up from this little low, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's what we call an Elliott Wave 5-wave trend. So nothing's cut in stone, but I'd be prepared for a top that lasts for a little bit this week. But this is, May is finished, so we can draw literally a line across the May low, which happened to be May 1st. That was the low of the month. We can draw a line right across the high made in May. That happened to be May 21st. So we know the extremes of May. So I don't have this table on here. The table's in that update to the election cycle report that I sent you. Should have copied it to put it on here, but this is the S&P in election year bias. If the S&P declines to below the May low in the weeks ahead, more than likely it will be above the May high by September 20th.
Got it.
So that's a piece of information. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know if there's a decline, then in 8 of the 11 years of the election cycle years that had a first quarter bias, by September 20th, it was above the May high, wherever it happened to be. And this is the kind of data I like, 100%. And since 1952, in 100% of the election years that had a first quarter positive return, the S&P was above the May low, by September 20th. So we know what the May low is. So whatever happens, you know, in the next few weeks or really 2 to 3 months, is that based on history in the election year that had the first quarter of positive bias, the S&P would be above the May low on September 20th. Is that going to be helpful? Well, it's going to be helpful if we see a decline.
Got it.
Then we can use this information. Maybe the S&P is just going to keep going straight up. I don't know. Then it would be irrelevant information. But once we have the May high and the low, then we can relate that to this positive period within the election cycle and get an idea in the past, at least, where the S&P has been about September 20th.
Got it. So using this data, and just to, I guess, recap for everybody, if we're going to get a decline here, and it does look like it's rolling over, and it, as you pointed out, we got some big numbers from reports coming out tomorrow, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But if we do get that decline and it goes below the May low, that's actually going to be quite bullish. You'd be looking to be a buyer of the S&P going into the fall, correct?
Yes, I'd be looking for an opportunity of when it would going to be making low if that should happen, very definitely, because that bias would be for a bounce back going into the fall, correct?
Got it. Okay. So last question about this. You go through September. Why don't you go through November? Is that because the data is not concrete, or it's not as clear?
Well, I'm going back to the average trend, and we can see, at least on average, there is a dip that lasts It's really about anywhere from four to eight weeks. And it's a very strong bias, by the way, of a summer high to a fall low. So that's why I don't go beyond this, on this particular study, September 20th, which is the beginning of fall, the end of summer, is there's a consistent late summer high into a fall low that where the market tends to be sideways to down.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you need to show us here with the election cycle, or can we jump to gold and silver?
Let's go to gold and silver. This is the key piece of information for the election cycle.
Yes, I would agree.
So my favorite market, by the way, the first advisory report that I ever wrote began in 1985, and it was the Precious Metals Timing Report. So it was just...
I think I was two. No, I'm teasing you. Excellent.
Just on gold, silver, and platinum started this. So the gold market's the market I've been actually been looking at the closest for so many years.
And that's awesome.
A little bit of background is that I use Elliott Wave analysis a lot to identify the probable trend position. So Elliott Wave is just kind of a system based on some counts that help you to identify where you are within a bull or a bear cycle. A lot of people make it very complicated. I tend to simplify it a lot. So that's kind of what we'll do right now.
Yeah.
But I'm really backing up here with this is a quarterly chart of gold going back to 1976.
That's it.
So by the way, does my cursor show when I move it around?
It does, and that's helpful, actually. So
okay. It fades out now and then. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
But, the piece of information just from this chart, and I always like to look at the technicals and say, well, what's the key piece of information that'll help us make a decision? And here the most important, going back to from the 1976 low, is that from an Elliott Wave term and a bull bear cycle term, we call this an impulsive wave, is probably not finished. I don't know if it is or not, and it's all about probabilities, making trading decisions. But typically, the outcome from this sort of pattern position, the outcome, it's not finished. We'll talk about some potential price targets here in a minute, but it's indicating that it's got a ways to go on the upside. However long that may or may not take, there's ways to go. And keep in mind, each one of these bars is 3 months. So, you know, this is some pretty long-term data.
Got it.
And by the way, I don't have much else about this in these charts, but typically the metals markets, final highs are made on speculative blow-offs. Because as you know, in a cycle, the vast majority of people that invest in whatever we're talking about, in this case is gold, enter the market in the final stages, you know, or
right.
It's newsworthy event. So that's actually a sign that the cycle is nearing the end when your neighbor starts telling you how much money he's making in gold. That's about the time you get your
sell.
Ethan, not to sell, but get ready to.
Get ready. So,
yeah, it's a speculative. So here we'll go to a month. This is down to a monthly chart.
Okay.
And again, it's just from the 2015 low. Again, this whole pattern structure is typically, it's not complete. More than likely, it has much higher to go. And I'm going to give you the exact price that will avoid any potential continued advance, at least from my point of view, before we're done here. So this is, again, the most important factor is the structure of this advance based on the cycles of optimism or pessimism. It's not complete, and it should have a bit higher to go. And there should be some sort of newsworthy speculative blow off before it's over.
Okay.
That's one of the signs that we're in the final. And some of the price targets, and again, it's not a forecast, but for this particular pattern structure, we'd be looking at a minimum on the upside around 2590 to 2675. Now, and that's not far above the market, another $250 or so, but that's just kind of a minimum target to fulfill this pattern. We'll be looking at some other price relationships.
And if I can ask a question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you said your price target about on top end 2675. That's for this specific cycle. This is not discussing a blow up top or blow off top or whatever have you, correct?
Correct. That's correct. That's okay. Correct. And the other thing is really important is this isn't a forecast that it will reach that, but this would be what typically would be reached to fulfill the minimum of this cycle on the upside.
Got it.
So in other words, if gold should eventually continue higher and reach, let's just round off to like 2,600, then I'd be taking a look at the structure, the momentum cycles, and a bunch of other stuff to see, is we near the top or are we going to the whole nother level?
Right.
And so, I don't know, we'll find out in the weeks ahead. Now we're going down to the weekly chart of gold. And this is the weekly, it's just the closing data, closing weeks, and it's right up through last Friday. So we're pretty close up to right up to date here. And again, the most important factor here is that any decline should be a correction within this higher time frame bull trend. So at some point, when a correction is finished, what always happens? Well, the trend prior to the correction resumes to a new extreme. So at some point, if gold is making a correction now, it's been essentially sideways for about 6 weeks or so. And if that's part of a correction, when that correction is complete, the bull trend should continue to a new high. So that's a good piece of information to have. And that's why I showed you some of those trading results I've had, double and triple digit returns in futures and Forex. The primary type of trade I do is to identify the end of a correction, because I know when a correction is complete, the market should continue to a new extreme. And corrections are much easier to identify than, let's say, targets on the impulsive side.
Got it.
Okay, so here's a key piece of information on weekly data. If gold should make a weekly close below 2,089.70, that's this little December 1st swing high close, then that voids any bullish outcome based on how I look at the market. So this is a hard stop on the bullish outlook. So just as when you make a trade, you never have an open trade without an open protective stop, is that this is like for, we can even say it's your stop out for a bullish forecast, I guess. But if that should happen, then from my point of view, using Elliott Wave pattern analysis cycles, it's voided a bullish outcome from the current position. So that's an important piece of information to have.
Yeah, and that's based on, again, data, and it looks like the high there, which the with the one, if you would, correct?
Yeah, that's the December 1st close. That's the week ending December 1st.
Got it. Okay. Okay, so excellent.
That's practical real-world information to have. And yes. What you see down here at the bottom of this indicator is it's a pretty smooth momentum cycle indicator. And it's at least warning us that gold is probably nearing a cycle low, and the momentum's probably going to turn up before too long, within one or two or three bars. And this is weekly data. So, you know, by the end of the month, gold is likely to complete this correction. So it's pretty timely right now.
Yeah, excellent. That's great information.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to happen. But the point is, we want to be orienting right now our trade strategies to identify if a gold is in a position to complete a low and continue to advance.
Got it. Okay. Now,
this could be very, very timely for your listeners. Let's hope.
Yeah. Excellent. No, that's great.
Yeah. So that's really what I got for gold. We'll take a look at GDX and silver also in a minute.
Yeah.
But any other questions you have either about gold or just the type of technical analysis that I use?
What I like is I'll give you some feedback. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to take in, but yet it's you outlay it and you're teaching it, for lack of a better word, very simplistically, and that's a very good thing, so you can understand it, but yet it's somewhat overwhelming. But it goes, I wonder how much it mirrors the S&P, or if that is even a thing. I don't know.
I don't either. I used to, you know, John Murphy wrote a book years and years ago about intermarket analysis.
Yes.
And I used to, let's say, do a little more intermarket analysis. We'll look a little bit on gold's relationship to the dollar in a minute. But I would never make a decision on that. What I would make a decision on, and when we look at gold versus the dollar, that if it looks like gold is in a position to make a significant reversal, I might then go look at, is the dollar in a position to make a significant reversal? Because they're pretty strongly related to each other.
Right.
And if they both independently are indicating the same thing, that strengthens the case for one or the other.
Got it.
Yeah. And I will mention also, I wrote the first self-study trading course in 1989 on, it was the Gann Elliott Fibonacci trading course, 1989. And there was the first self-study course. It was 17 pounds of material of 11 by 17 chart books, 12 audio tapes and 3 ring binders, you know.
I remember those days.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, I am a teacher of this stuff, even though the way to teach it practically is also to successfully trade it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's move to some of the ETFs.
So this is the GDX. And needless to say, the GDX and gold more or less trend together and make reversals about the same time. So I just have this one chart for GDX because if someone's interested and has some experience familiar with mining stocks, if gold's in a position to potentially resume a bull trend, then more than likely mining stocks are going to do it also. But this is just a classic five-wave impulsive advance in the May high. And we can see the momentum cycle is reaching oversold. It's not there yet. And we can see potentially what we want to be aware of is around 3220 all the way down to about 3018. This little swing low is a very typical retracement area, our target for a correction against an impulse trend. So if the GDX were to be sideways to down for another week or so, ideally reaching the levels I'm showing here, it doesn't have to reach exactly that. But what we want to be aware of is this decline is probably a correction. So there might be a pretty good setup here in the next week or two or so.
Got it. Yeah, that looks beautiful, actually.
It does. It's almost textbook. It's almost too good.
When you're just too perfect. I don't want to get too confident. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all about trade strategies. Everything's about trade strategies, identifying the position, and then what's the specific trade. I can tell you about a week ago, I put in on Twitter, about once a week, I put a chart up, and I put a chart up of a gold setup. And it got triggered on Thursday, put the chart on Wednesday, and it stopped out on Friday. So today I put up a chart and said, here was the buy, and then, oops, here was the sell a day later.
Yeah.
As long as you got that stop in, you can live to do another trade.
Exactly.
Here's July, and it really looks the same, doesn't it?
It does.
Beautiful five-wave advance. Mm-hmm. And, probable, it's probably making a correction. Mm-hmm. It probably has a week or two to go to complete this correction. When a correction is complete, a bull trend resumes. So,
yeah, that's beautiful too. Yeah. It's interesting too. Now, I was checking the silver price, and it's down today, and it's inching its way to the 27, or I was looking at the 27, around the 27 level, and that's what it's doing.
So there we go.
There we go.
Updated three times a week in the Dynamic Trader Report by Robert Miner.
Got it.
Kind of put the plug in there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, is there any other charts that you can show us? Or there we go. The dollar. Yeah.
The dollar. And by the way, the silver and the GDX, percentage-wise, significantly outperformed gold in the last up cycle. I don't know if that's going to continue, but percentage gain-wise, they were quite a bit more than gold. So this is the dollar, and this is a quarterly data going back to 2001. The point of this chart, this long-term chart, is September 2022, completed just a beautiful bull market, five-section impulsive bull market. And what that means, typically at least, the dollar would be net bearish, sideways to down, at least into September 2026. So we got another couple of years or more than likely. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a minimum, and more likely it'd go into 2028. So that has some serious ramifications longer term of a dollar being sideways to down for the next 2 to 4 years.
Ramifications with everything, really.
Yeah. And so there's probably people listening to your broadcast that have to make decisions, longer term decisions. They're in business that what's the dollar trend, you know? And so I think more than likely sideways to down for 2 to 4 years. Here's a weekly trade wise. I think the dollar, remember how I said that if the gold's about to make a reversal, dollar probably is. Well,
there you go.
Dollar, the May high, if the dollar should advance and take out the May high, then this bearish outcome is something's changed. Okay, so in other words, it probably shouldn't do that. It should have a corrective advance, maybe lasting a few weeks, and that would be a great setup on the short side. So the dollar is in a position to have completed a weekly low and then be sideways to up for 2 or 3 weeks.
Got it.
So that's just something to be aware of. Let's go to the next chart. And this is the dollar monthly data going back to, what's this, about 2015. And this is the gold monthly data. So typically, most of the time, the dollar and gold trend in opposite direction.
Right.
But it's not all the time. We can even go back to most of 2019. They actually trended together. So when someone says the dollar is also, or gold is always going to trend in the opposite direction, all you got to do is bring a chart up and say, well, most of the time that's correct. But I wouldn't want to bet the farm on it, because sometimes it's not, and sometimes they actually trend together for many months before they separate. But in general, we're looking at the dollar as in a longer-term bear market, and generally, we're looking at gold in a longer-term bull market.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I get out of this is that I have that thesis, but it's interesting now that we're looking at really the science of it, the calculus of it, and it's confirming that. Again, not forecasting, but it's the data is suggesting that as well as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Interesting.
Important thing about trading, all the data is out there. So you don't have to guess, you know, it's where to say, you know, gold and dollar always trade opposite each other. Well, wait a minute. That's simply
not true.
Yeah. So, you know, most of the time, yeah, not always.
Excellent. All right. Well, Bob, is there anything else that you got here, or is that just about wrap it up?
Yeah, that's all I got. You know, that's just a plug for the election cycle book. If you trade stocks, indexes, ETFs, I think you'll find a lot of really valuable information in it. And of course, if you're interested in what we just talked about, go to dynamictraders.com and check out the report and trading course.
Absolutely. Bob Miner, dynamictraders.com, and the author of The Definitive Guide to the U.S. Election Cycle and Stock Market Trends. I have my copy right here, and you were so gracious to sign it for me.
Super.
Thank you so much. It's very, very timely, if you would. So
I think so. Yeah.
I think so, too. Well, thank you so much for your time, Bob. Excellent. And I'm going to get this out right away.
Fantastic. Y'all take care. See you again sometime.
Yeah, we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.